Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Swingles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, YouTube, or now band.video, oh no, look out. Or you're listening wherever podcasts are served. Thank you so much for your attention. We certainly do appreciate it. We couldn't do it without the amazing support of our sponsors. Helin 951 has been the newest sponsor to the show. They are making something that is pretty interesting. It is a fermented soy drink, which first time you hear that, you go, wait a second, I'm not quite sure about this. And then what you should do is then read up on it. And what you'll find, the common denominator with this stuff, is that the people that are going through, oh boy, and how can I say this without getting us all in trouble? But let me phrase it this way. The people that have cancer have, for some reason, taken a liking to this sort of fermented soy beverage. So you can read into that however you'd like. I'll tell you what, the best thing to do is to actually read about it. Read about the origin story of this company. Man, if I were these people that saw the effect it had on my friend with cancer, I'd probably do the exact same thing they did, which is start a company. You can check out the website, Helin951. It's spelled HAELAN951.com/macro. And what you can do is read up a little bit about it. You can watch videos. They will explain to you what this is, what this product is, what fermented soy drinks are. It sounds a little questionable. I'm not sure. I'll be honest with you. It's not the greatest tasting drink I've ever had, but man, is it impressive when you read what it does. And I had the conversation about whether or not soy was good for you or bad for you, or does it turn you into a soy boy? And the answer is yes. If you get the wrong kind, it will definitely turn you into the soy boys that we see out there. So you better make sure you get the right kind. The soy products that they use are grown in a certain region of Mongolia that works best for them. It's a quality crop. They use the fermentation process, which makes a huge difference. And it's organic growing. And here in the United States, they have poor soil. They have GMO crops. They spray pesticides all over. It's toxic. Of course, the soy here is creating problems, but that's not where this company gets their soy. So do yourself a favor. Check the link in the description and read up about it first. And then once you take a look, maybe try it out for yourself. If it's right for you, use the promo code MACRO on the way out to save yourself some money. And our other new sponsor is True Hemp Science. They are making, I think they're making the best hemp-based CBD out there. The only way I can tell is because My shoulder feels great. My shoulder had been all torn up, and I was hoping that there was going to be something out there, some CBD product that was going to help me. I'd tried a bunch of them with limited results. But True Hemp Science is amazing. They sent me a box with a bunch of products in there. What I've been taking is the number 19 and the number 41. So go to their website, go to truehempscience.com/macroaggressions. From that page, you'll be able to find everything that they're selling. They've got a lot of products. If you spend $65 or more, they'll send you a free bottle of their number 81 distillate, which is a $26 value. If you buy anything over $150, there's free shipping. So inside the United States, of course. So take a look. Check it out. See if there's someone in your life that's having some aches and pains. If they are interested, maybe you want to buy some of this stuff and send it to them as a nice little gift to ring in the new year. Well, I'm excited about this episode for a variety of reasons, but Conspiracy Kyle is back with us. He has a great podcast called A Conspiracy in the Force. Kyle, good to see you again. How are you doing?
I am doing wonderful, Charlie. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, the reason why you're back, besides your shining face, of course, is because you've written a book. And I must confess, I got a little bit of a sneak peek on this book because you were nice enough to ask me to write the foreword to the book, which I enthusiastically did because of my love of Star Wars, my interest in the sorts of topics that we get into on my show, my great deal of respect for you, for what you're doing, your ability to put these things together in a way that no one else is doing. I find it amazing. And I'm so, and you said, I was thinking of writing a book. And I was like, you definitely need to write a book on this because it's perfect for the book. The book's out. Let's talk about it. What's going on? Yes. Tell us about the book.
So the book's out, and I'll put it up on the screen for anybody that's watching on video. So it's called Intergalactic Totalitarianism. It sounds like a college course. You know, maybe right. I should go teach it. But the subtext is authoritarian tactics and traits in a galaxy far, far away, in a galaxy not so far away. And Charlie, thank you so much for writing the foreword. Everybody go check it out. I think there is a preview up there on Amazon if you want to go check out part of that foreword and some of the introduction.
And the link will be in the description for anyone. If you want to go to Amazon, and you can type in Conspiracy Kyle and find it, but I'm going to also put the link in the description in case you forget, or you just want to have an easy access to it. So all that stuff will be down below for people.
Absolutely. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I'll tell you what, I really love the guy that did the cover art for this. And Charlie, I showed you a few kind of renderings of things I was looking for, but I went with something pretty simple. It's the Death Star destroying Earth. And I think that's all I really needed to say, because the whole point of the book and really what it boils down to is things we've talked about before, things I've talked about with Sam on Tim Foyle Hat and a lot of other shows, is that things you see in Star Wars about how totalitarian governments act is almost 100% how they act in our world. Right. And things that have happened in history, things that are happening now, look at this movie, look at other sci-fi movies that have totalitarian governments, you see a lot of the same beats. And I think it's just, what I wanted to do was kind of line those things up to just get everybody to think, like, listen, we need to learn from history. You know, history rhyme, you know, people say, you know, history repeats, but George Lucas always said, you know, like poetry, history rhymes, you know, and you see similar things happening time and time again. So I kind of wanted to go through the book and in detail some of that stuff that we had talked about in the past. So,
yeah, it's such a great, I mean, since the first time I connected with you, I've just been overly enthusiastic about this idea, because I didn't ever really see it until it's the old painting with all the dots where you can't see the elephant until you squint and then you see the elephant, then you can always see the elephant from that moment on. When it came to Star Wars movies, I love them. Obviously, I love the science fiction component as a kid, but then you get older and you get a different version of it. You get this sort of thing that Pixar is really great at, which is having two storylines running simultaneously, one that's kind of on a lower level for the kids, one that's on a higher level for the adults. And they'll laugh at, you know, there'll be a joke and it'll be the punchline, and the kids are laughing for one reason, the adults are laughing for another reason. And that's a real talent. And I didn't ever realize how smart George Lucas was with his writings. And ultimately he didn't, I mean, he directed the first one, but stepped out, but he was always involved in this, and having this ability to do two things at once: entertain people with a science fiction movie, which is visually stimulating and all those things, while also talking about a very deep message in there. And what George Lucas did through these movies was embed, as you know, these old storylines, the Roman storylines and Greek mythology and all of these old things, the hero's journey and in the Odyssey, and, you know, these concepts and these stories that are ancient, and yet they're not so old that they don't apply to us. You can find a way to make it apply to us, whether it's currently here or whether it's a galaxy far, far away. We see this sort of pattern, this overlap. And I just love that we're able to, I'm able to transition now from being a kid watching the movie and saying, isn't this cool? They've got TIE fighters, X-Wings and all that, to saying, oh, the Trade Federation guys, I know who they are. Wait a second. Hang on a second. There's a political science theme running through this as well. So let's talk about that. Let's start with this, because you did something in this book that I think is remarkable. We've got the Hegelian dialectic, right? And David, the problem, reaction, solution. And David Icke has done a lot of work with that. He's kind of renamed some of that totalitarian tiptoe and things like that. You took it to another level with the three C's in this, the Hegelian dialectic, but you put your own little spin on that. Well, what are the three C's?
Sure. So I wanted to kind of take that problem, reaction, solution and make those words a little bit more demonstrative, right? Because problem, reaction, solution, we all know that, we talk about that all the time. And it's a very good way to talk about how this control mechanism system works. But, you know, as I was watching some of the Star Wars prequel movies specifically, every time something really bad was happening in the universe, people would say, this is a crisis. This is a crisis. They wouldn't say it's a problem. I'm like, you know what? So what if I just kind of changed the problem, reaction, solution to three other things? So what I changed it to for this, and it specifically works in these Star Wars prequel movies, you see this kind of template happen over and over again, is you have crisis, you have consent given by the people, and then you have control. You know, and you know this, Charlie, it always ends up in control for those people in power, for those totalitarians. So, you know, a crisis happens, right? You know, like you said, this Trade Federation, it has a huge trade dispute. They blockade a planet, they invade a planet. It's a crisis. You know, and it happens in the next movie. There's a civil war brewing. That's a crisis. You know, just in transition to our world, right? 9/11, that's a crisis. The COVID stuff, that's a crisis. World War II, that's a crisis. All these things are a catalyst to launch these next two steps. And just like in problem, reaction, solution, the crisis, consent, control, they always want control. I mean, that's obvious. And, you know, Charlie, and you and everybody listening knows that. They always want control, but they have to create that crisis. And I think that the middle piece of consent is very important, especially right now with what's happening with the medical bullshit. Everybody has given consent. It's not just a reaction. It's not just saying, oh my God, something needs to happen. It's people literally saying, here, take my rights away. Yeah. I don't need them. I don't want them. Government, you know what is best. Do with my rights as you will. And then we're going to have peace and security and all this shit. And it never ends up that way. So I kind of tried to reframe it in that context, and you can frame that in our world as well.
That's an important part, is the differentiation you made with consent as opposed to just reaction. Because a reaction could be, oh wow, and then nothing behind it. Whereas consent is, oh wow, here, let me give you the authority to do whatever you need to do after this crisis. We get to a point in, and you mostly focused on the prequels, right?
Yeah.
So, and it's not to say that this sort of formula doesn't happen in the Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, three pack or the last three pack as well. But you focused on the early components of this, and what we saw in there was a transformation of one of the characters from senator to chancellor to emperor.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And you start to hear, I mean, when you hear terms like chancellor, I go to Reich Chancellor, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I go straight to Nazi Germany. And senators, of course, senators have been around. That's a Roman term. We've embraced that here in America. We see this, the transition from a humble senator to, I guess he became a chancellor against his own will, a temporary chancellor. He's still in. And then we watched what happens as that morphs into becoming an emperor. So they're laying out in these prequel movies what happens when you allow power to go unchecked to the wrong type of person or the wrong personality traits. Let's talk about that transformation, the senator, chancellor, emperor movement. That's a fascinating one. Is there any truth to the rumor that you modeled this after Mitch McConnell?
Absolutely. You know, as I was writing this book, my computer background was just all kinds, a collage of Mitch McConnell. I couldn't get enough of him. You know, he was invading my dreams. You know, I almost just ended up writing a book about him and scrapping this whole idea. But but yeah, you're right. I mean, and honestly, even in this book, as I look through it, I make very, very few references to even Darth Vader or Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? Like your main characters of the story, because like you mentioned, it is such a layered story that there's the battles, there's the Jedi, there's the personal stuff with Anakin, you know, Anakin also transitioned to a different person, to Darth Vader. But really he was all, and we all love Darth Vader. He's one of the greatest villains of all time. I would say maybe the best, but he's still just a pawn, right? He's basically a useful idiot at the end of the day. Yeah. Palpatine, to me, that's a more of a compelling story, because if it weren't for him, you know, nothing would have changed. He's the puppet. He's basically, in my opinion, he's like a one person deep state. He's like a one person Illuminati. Like, you know, in our world, there's this whole group of people that make sure everything happens. In this case, it was just him. It was just him in the dark side. We're able to do all this stuff. So, but you notice throughout this entire thing, like you said, he mentions a few times, like, I'm just doing this at the will, for the will of the people. They chose me. They wanted me to do this. You know, in the middle movie, they grant him emergency powers. You know,
we heard that before.
Once again, against his will, he plainly says, and when you watch the movie, you crack up when you hear this. He literally says, you know, I promise I will give these powers up when the crisis is over.
Yeah.
And
you have my word on that. Yeah. And he looks very sincere, and you know, you just look at that and you go, he's such a politician. Just know, if you know anything, I mean, if you're a kid watching it, maybe you don't know any better, but if you're an adult watching it, you know, he's never giving those powers back.
Never. And he's never giving them up for one of two reasons. For one, he will make that current crisis go on, or he will create a new crisis. And that's why we talk about this crisis consent control, because he keeps doing this. They mention it. I read the novelizations of these movies to go along, which I encourage anybody, if they like Star Wars but don't really like the prequel movies, I would encourage people to go read the novelizations of those, because it gives a lot more color and background to a lot of the political stuff that goes on. But he kind of forgot where I was going with that.
That's right.
He basically and even the I would say even the Jedi. You know, one of the important things that I talk about in the book is that not only are totalitarian regimes started by terrible people, but they also are allowed to exist because people do nothing to stop it.
Right.
You know, you have the Jedi, you have Yoda, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Mace Windu, all these really powerful people who are supposed to be like these monk-like heroes, meditating, studying, understanding what's really going on, but they were as manipulated as anyone else. And at the end of the day, they were, all but two of them were dead. And the ones that survived spent 20 years in exile, basically scratching their heads like, what the hell went wrong? Like, why did we not see this happening? So it's one of the points of the book is that you have to understand, like you mentioned about David Icke, the totalitarian tiptoe. You have to understand when you start hearing politicians saying these things, like, we're just doing this to keep you safe. Listen, this is for your own good. When you hear that stuff, immediately run the other direction.
Right.
Because it is never for your benefit, even if you think it is. So even the people playing along with everything that's happening, especially right now, I think they're going to have a rude awakening when, you know, if the world does have a humongous changeover of a, you know, one world government, what have you, the people that have been playing along with this are going to be treated just like the people who were fighting against it.
Great.
And that's another very sad thing about it as well, is that there's a side of people who know something bad is happening and don't do anything, and people who go along with it thinking that it's the right thing. In the end, both of those groups of people end up getting wiped out. And it you see it in these movies, you see it in our world, especially. And you had brought this up to me before about, you know, the brown shirts, right?
Right. Yeah. In World War II, they thought they had picked the side. They'd pick Hitler's side, and because they recognized this was where the power was flowing, and they did the bidding of the early administration, and were rewarded by being slaughtered by the SS, and without ever seeing it coming. And the reason why they didn't see it coming was they didn't realize the game. They didn't know the game. And Lucas and the writers, the people that are involved in the making of this Star Wars universe, they clearly know the game. They understand how it's played. There's that scene where they grant the emergency powers to Palpatine, and there's that great line that she says, which is, "So this is how democracy dies, to thunderous applause." And it strikes me as kind of where we are right now, in a sense. You see all the, or at least the summer of 2020, you would see all the people out there banging pots and pans on their balconies for it, clap for NHS at 8 o'clock in the UK or in Europe and everything. People out there, so it's like, oh, so this is how totalitarianism is formed, to thunderous applause by the dumbed down masses that think they're on the right side. They think they're helping. They're probably good people. They are good people. They want what's best, but they're being manipulated. And we see that this manipulation, it's not limited to, it's not just movies. It happens in real life. And I'm curious about, I'm just curious about what else you found in the way of some sort of themes with the Star Wars world that matched up with what we've been going through with the COVID one. One of the things that you talk about is the language surrounding it. Was there more than just language? I mean, it had to have been some sort of actions or decrees or temporary measures, or it's all for your safety or something. It seemed like there was a bit of overlap between the things that the Emperor would say and things that Emperor Fauci said.
Yeah. And I think you don't really see a lot of this in the movies, but like I said, in the novels, it provides a lot more context. You know, as you get into the third movie, Revenge of the Sith, there's been this 3-4 year war going on, right? So this war has been happening in the galaxy back and forth, and Palpatine's manipulating both sides. It was never meant to end, you know, just like what's going on right now. Maybe it's never meant to end. It's just meant to disorient and disable everything that's going on. And what you find out is happening is that they have this thing called the HoloNet. So it's just like basically like our TV, right? Our news channels, et cetera. And this is very interesting. They pump messages out to the public stating that the Republic, who's like the government of the time, the Republic is losing the war. They continue to tell the people that the Republic is losing the war to the separatists, but that's not the case. At any point, Palpatine can wave his wand and stop the war. He can stop the droid army on the other side and just end it, because he controls that side too. But people are put in a place of fear, right? They're put in a place of fear, of uncertainty. They're willing to do whatever is needed to be done. There's even like this capital city is locked down. It's physically locked down. People are not allowed to go anywhere. I mean, I'm like, come on. Is this from 2020? This is
planet 2021.
Yeah. Is this 2005? And this is crazy. But so you see all that stuff happening. And then, you know, once this war kind of miraculously ends, Then Palpatine decrees that, hey, guess what? Well, that's over. But guess what? Now the Jedi are the enemies. And, you know, people are accustomed to this lifestyle of war and war and war. And now it switched from this separatist army being the bad guys to the Jedi being the armies. So you can kind of think, now that we're talking about this, you can kind of think about that as all these different new, this is the new variant. Oh, no, that doesn't matter anymore. No, this is the new thing we need to worry about. No, that's
ISIS
not
K.
ISIS K, right? It's like, right. No, you can't wear a cloth mask anymore. Why would you be wearing that, you freaking idiot? We wear this. So that he continues to keep changing the game, but because people are accustomed to the game, they keep playing along and they cheer on. Unfortunately, they cheer on the slaughter of the Jedi at the end of that movie because they've been accustomed and brainwashed to what they've been fed this whole time.
Yeah. We see that a lot here with our current situation. We get promised one thing and delivered something totally different. And the people continue to go along with it. We see the boogeyman change. In America, from September 11th, 2001 on, they quite rightly calculated that America needs a good boogeyman in order to manipulate the people to get in line to do things that would rightly be against their own best interests, like giving up their rights in the Patriot Act or going and invading countries that had nothing to do with you and things like that. So they've found that a boogeyman works, but there's only so long you can use that one where it's got to come to an end. It's got to change. You got to keep the fear fresh. People can normalize. People are adaptable. They can get used to all kinds of crazy things like bombs falling on them for years and years and years. They can normalize that. So you've always got to have that new invisible enemy. So it's funny that you mentioned that because it, you know, you've got this in the books and movies, you've got this droid army, clone army, battling, and yet it's being manipulated by both sides. And like you said, once that war ends, then it's the Jedi are now the problem. So it's like once terrorism isn't the big thing in America anymore, it's the new invisible enemy. It's a virus that's around the corner, i.e. the Jedi that we have to worry. They're coming to get you. They might be here. You've got to be suspicious of them. But I'll tell you one thing, we're going to need a little bit more. We're going to need you to give up your rights. We're going to need you to get in line. We're going to need you to allow your planet to be mined for some substance or whatever, because if you don't, then we're all going to get invaded and die. So it's a tactic that's, it's quite devious. It's quite brilliant in a horrible, megalomaniacal sort of way. But the idea of somebody owning both sides of the fight.
Yeah.
And maintaining the fight because it's not meant to end. It's meant to be continuous.
Yes.
Using that, the stress of that to wear down your enemy, wear down your people, wear down their will, drain them of their resources. You have to be a real devious piece of shit to think like this. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of his main purposes is what we talked about a little bit earlier is wearing down the Jedi, right? Cause like the Jedi, in my opinion, the Jedi, I can always consider them as like an intermediary between the people and like the government, right? They're basically your firepower, you know, they're the ones protecting the people. So if you can get rid of that layer, you can inflict anything you want on these people. So I make a few allusions in the book to a gun control type mechanism to try to get rid of these Jedi, because if you can get rid of them, if you kind of find a way to demonize that, boom, then you can do whatever you want, inflict any number of horrors. And, you know, the interesting part is that, and this is something I didn't pick up on until maybe a few years ago, as far from a symbolic perspective, when you watch these movies, and I didn't believe it until I watched it. As you watch these three prequel movies, if you watch the skyline of the main planet of the capital city of Coruscant, it slowly gets more and more cloudy and more dark as the movies go along. So even like, that's something that like, I had no idea until I watched like a little video of them. I'm like, holy shit, that is very important. So that is very symbolic of clouds, right? The clouds, uncertainty, the fog of war, you know, like when you talk about, hear about soldiers in battle, have no idea which way is left, which way is right. That's exactly what's going on right now. We're in a fog of, you know, an information war. That's no different. And so many people have no idea where to go, what to turn to, what's right, what's wrong, what should they do? Should they go here? Should they stay at home? You know, so there's all of that fog and uncertainty is just a ripe harvest for the people that want to take over more and more power.
Yeah, and that's such a great catch to notice the clouds and the sky changing. There's, you know, I wonder with the director, I know that Hemingway used to do that in his books. I took a Hemingway class in high school, and we would read all his books, and it was, there were all these little subtle things that you could, that meant, that looked like one thing, but meant something else, you know, rough seas or cloudy things. You think, oh, it's bad for the sea. Well, it's really about something going on in their head that's cloudy. So I love it when you catch that, when you catch the directors putting in some symbols that are maybe subconsciously connecting with the audience in a way like, hey, you know, the picture seems a little darker, a little bit more ominous. The skyline seems a little bit more ominous because the times are a little bit more ominous these days. And I get the feeling like we're being stage managed in the COVID thing as well, where we get cloudy days and cloudy days, and then there'll be a ray of sunshine, and then it goes back to cloudy days, and they're messing with us the way a director, not messing, but subtly little things in there. I love that you the authoritarianism is like the main theme of the book, right? It's sort of like it runs through this, but the traits of authoritarians that you see in these people, and not all of the characters have all of the traits, but you see them running through a lot of these characters, man. It makes me feel like Lucas or whoever, you know, the directors of the prequels and everything. It makes me think that, like, they would probably never admit to this, but during the casting process, they were probably like, they probably had a guy in mind, and they're like, I'm looking for a character that looks like this asshole, this guy. I'm looking for a character that looks just like Mitch McConnell. You know, I don't know why I'm picking on Mitch McConnell today. You know, and some guy's gonna walk in, look enough like him, and go, that, the fucking look on that guy's face, I just don't like. So I wonder about in these movies with these authoritarians, man, I wonder if they cast these characters or if they wrote these storylines based on actual people that they, I mean, obviously there's Hitler references and Stalin running through all of like this, especially like Star Wars, anything like that. When you see him, like that idea, but like, I wonder who did you ever pick up or notice that there are any of these characters you ever got the feeling they were like based off of someone that we would recognize?
Yeah, I would say, you know, a big direct influence for Lucas was, you know, of course, World War II, of course, Vietnam. But I think also like the Nixon administration, you know, talk about someone who got up on the podium and just lied their ass off. I mean, but look at Palpatine in that kind of context. That was kind of right in the era where, you know, Lucas was writing some of this stuff and thinking of the ideas for like the prequels and things. So that was one administration that I know that he had a very, very big disdain for. But you're right. I mean, like, I talk a little bit about some of these traits. Like, I think the biggest one that all these assholes have is narcissism. They are pure 100% narcissists. And until you like understand, like it's a word I've always known, but I've really never understood what it really means. You know, you hear it thrown out, but then as you look at the components of what it actually means, it makes a lot of sense. And it makes sense why, not that I'm excusing anybody's actions, everybody's accountable for their own actions, but you understand why people are the way they are. Yep. And you understand that some people cannot be reasoned with, and some people are always going to put themselves on a pedestal. They're going to kick you to make themselves feel better. They're going to think that they're the only one that are doing anything about anything. They're going to think that they're the hero, but they're the villain the whole time. And that's, you know, that's Palpatine to a T. And like you said, Fauci, anybody else in our world, just look at all of these people. They are all extreme narcissists. They use exploitation. They use manipulation. All of these things they use to empower themselves, beat down people, and have an inflated sense of who they are. And the thing that drives them crazy is these conversations that we're having here. They can't understand why people like us who are talking about this stuff, who are listening to these kind of conversations, don't also put them on a pedestal. That drives them absolutely batshit crazy. And that's why you see so much of the crazy psychotic authoritarian tactics that we've been seeing recently. I mean, just look at what Trudeau has been saying, and the guy in France. You know, these people who aren't vaccinated are basically not even citizens anymore. Like this and that. It's like, just because they're not choosing to believe what you're saying, which you're pathological liars, why would they believe what you're saying? So narcissism, I think, is a very key trait that you see in Palpatine, specifically in Star Wars, in every single world leader.
Yeah. And you know what was fascinating to watch was through the course of the prequels was the transformation of Anakin Skywalker into Darth Vader. Of course, it's one of the main themes that runs through, and it's one of the main storylines that goes through that. And at its core, it's someone is so desperate to control that his wife won't die, but he's got to have that control. And it turns you insane. Turns you into a monster. The type of personality that would have to have that control is a type of personality that can't be reasoned with. And so once he makes that transition from that little kid who's in the speeder races, you know, it becomes a much darker energy. And it all comes down to, needing that control. And since I wrote a book about control, I'm always sort of, it brings me back to that. And it shows, you know, I always think about how much horror has been unleashed on this world in the name of control. Yeah. And the main character, Darth Vader, you know, who became this legendary character, was made that way because of his desire to control everything, right?
Yeah, and he and you see the irony in all of that. And you know, he wanted this control. He knew he was more powerful than everybody else. He knew it internally, and it was true. You know, they said his Jedi blood cell count was off the charts or whatever that shit was. But you know, one of the fundamental things was at his core, he wanted to help save people from dying. You know, that's the crazy part. He had visions of his mother dying. He wasn't able to save her. She died. He had visions of his wife dying. And he's like, listen, I'm not going to let that happen again. She's going to live. She's going to have she's pregnant. She's going to have these kids. Things are going to be great. So in order to try to save that person, he kills all the Jedi, you know? So it's like you save one thing and kill 500 people. But in the end, he didn't even save her at all. She ended up dying. And Palpatine told him that, listen, you're the reason she's dead. You know? So it's like the twisted irony in that is that you, just like we talked about the useful idiots, is that you go along with this thing because you think you got this reward at the end. But he didn't realize that he cannot have this relationship with his wife and this servitude to the dark side. They're exclusive things. You can't have your cake and eat it too. So one of those things had to go by the wayside, and it was the thing that he did all those things to get and maintain.
There's so many lessons in this. There's so many lessons. I mean, I think that people can be dismissive of science fiction movies or they can be like, oh, it's just for geeks and everything. For sure. There's definitely that component of it. I started watching Star Wars movies when the first one came out when I was 5. So like, imagine being 5 years old, seeing Star Wars. It broke my brain, right? I thought it was great. But now I watch it, I see a different version of it and these lessons in there, like this, what a valuable lesson to, you know, the more you try to control, you know, there's even a line in there, the more I tighten my grip, the more star systems slip through it. Right. You know, it's like the more you try to control something.
Yeah.
It's not the way the universe works. And you have to be aware of that. You wind up becoming something that you didn't want to be in order to hold on to something that you were never going to be able to hold on to in the first place.
A perfect analogy is if anybody has seen like the Breaking Bad series, you know, this character, he's dying of cancer and he says, listen, I'm not going to be here forever. I'm a school teacher. I need to find a way to make a shit ton of money so my family isn't going to suffer. So he's a chemist. He starts making meth and doing this and that. And throughout the whole series, that's all he says. He's like, listen, you know, wife and kids, I'm doing this for you. In the end, they want nothing to do with him because he's a deranged psychopath, basically, you know? So it's just a very important thing. You know, just think of like, you know, people in abusive relationships, like, oh, I don't want you going out of the house. I want you doing this. I don't want you that. Well, that person won't end up wanting to be with you anyways, because your grip is so tightened. Right. And I think, you know, when we talk about that crisis, consent, and control, I talk about this towards the end of the book, because I want to end it on, you know, a little bit of hope, you know, right? It's kind of you know, it's Star Wars, but it's also very dark, you know, showing how this thing, you know, goes to shit. You know, that crisis, consent, and the control, I will say, when you get into the original movies, I will say that is flipped in the favor of the rebels. And, you know, the Empire is the one, you know, in defense now, right? You know, there's a crisis that they have to deal with that somebody else is inflicting on them. So I think I always hold out hope of anything in our world that those things can be flipped. You know, they're inflicting these crises on us now, but, you know, I always hold out hope that this could be turned around and the crisis can be flipped on them. And then their Death Star, you know, gets destroyed. And I think that's one of the main points of the original Star Wars movies, is that, you know, they can have, I think the Death Star is a perfect analogy for the government overplaying their hand. You know, they didn't need to flex their muscle and just destroy a planet to piss off one person. You know, they made a terrible, terrible decision that empowered the rest of the galaxy to say, what the fuck? What are you guys doing? These people didn't do anything to me. You just destroyed them on a whim. And then they're like, we're going to band together and take you out. You know, so I think, you know, as much pressure as can be put on these people, they start making mistakes. And I kind of will always hold out hope that, you know, things could turn around and these people could get their comeuppance in our world too.
Yeah. And every time the Empire is displayed in these movies, it's very cold and dark and metallic and gray and dystopian and devoid of love and anything like that. It's an interest. So they definitely symbolize this empire as being, you know, like a totalitarian regime that is not allowing expression. Even there's even like a kind of a transhumanist component to it as well, where you've got men dressed like robots, you know, with their armor on that most people just assumed weren't even real guys in the first place. Probably you know, most people probably thought they were robots to begin with. And you find that it's this weird blending of man with robots and nobody looks very happy. And you see, you go, well, that's the world that these globalist maniacs envision for us. That's the fourth industrial revolution. That's the World Economic Forum's dream for us. We'll be living in these micro cities, and they want to run, you know, they want to run this whole operation. They're starting to feel a whole lot like the Galactic Empire, the World Economic Galactic Empire Forum.
Yeah. And you know, what's really interesting, you mentioned a little bit ago about the coldness of the Empire. And, you know, there's an animated series that came out a few years ago called Star Wars Rebels, which talked about the lead up to, you know, Episode 4, A New Hope, right? Where these rebel cells are kind of starting to form and become what you see in the movies. And there was a really, really great episode. And I didn't love the series, but there was a really great episode where, and you see this kind of trope happen all the time where, you know, someone from the rebel side and the Empire side, they both crash landed on this planet and they had to work together to kind of figure out, you know, a way to get out of it. And they did. And that stuff was kind of corny and whatever, but they worked together. And then at the end of the episode, the person from the rebellion went back to his crew and they were high-fiving and giving hugs, like, hey, we're glad to see you, this and that. Mm-hmm. The Imperial officer goes back to his starship. Nobody says a word to him. he just goes back and sits in his quarters in complete silence. You know, there's no happiness or gratitude for anything he's done or people happy to see him. There is just nothing there devoid of any emotion. And I think a lot of those globalist assholes, they try to make it sound like their lives are so great. But I'm telling you, Charlie, you probably agree with me. Their lives probably suck. I think they hate themselves, which is why they hate us.
Probably. Yeah. I think there's a lot of trauma there with these people. I think they're all fucked up. I don't excuse their behavior for that. And I know you don't either, but to be fair, I mean, you're looking at trauma-based mind control, people that come from bloodline families, people that come from well-connected military families. There's a lot of crazy shit that goes on. We would be doing it a disservice if we pretended like that stuff wasn't a part of this. Now we can debate how much of a part it is, but we're definitely talking about some broken ass people that are trying to run this planet. And it seems like some of the things that we see here in reality, we're also borrowed for the movies as well. Like things like psychopaths, moving up the ladder, and being attracted to positions of power, be that trade federations or, Jedi councils or wherever. We start to see this magnetism pulling in, manipulative and psychopathic, sociopathic, characters, which are, you know, if you're making movies and writing books, those are the characters you want because they're interesting. Unfortunately, we have them in real life running our businesses and running our governments and in charge of our policies. So I'm just wondering, I mean, I don't know who borrowed it from whom, you know, I mean, it seems like, psychopaths in positions of power is just kind of a known and accepted thing, even in the Galactic Empire, or even in a galaxy far away.
Yeah, I mean, everything that, you know, everything you see on the screen, everything that any director puts, anything that any author puts in a book, you know, they live and breathe in this world that we're in right here, Charlie. And, you know, they like you mentioned earlier, like they see that one asshole like that. That's the guy that I want to portray in the movie, because that's the kind of psychopath that is ruining my life, you know, and that's ruined countless other people's lives. And you sometimes can't differentiate the two. There's such a blend there of reality and science fiction. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I get a little off put when people consider Star Wars to be science fiction, because I personally consider it, like you mentioned earlier, I consider it more in the vein of, like, you know, Greek, Egyptian, Roman mythology. Yeah. You know, it just so happens to take place in space. And you know, that really, you know, and people say like, oh, you if you like Star Wars, you must believe in space and all this stuff. I mean, it's like, to me, that really anymore, that really has no significance to me. I'm looking at the underlying story. You know, it could take place in a desert here. It could take place, you know, down the street. You know, there was a new Star Wars series that came out where it showed, you know, a band of rebels, you know, chasing after this hover train in the desert. I'm like, that's just like a horses fight going on an old train robbery in the old West, you know. So it's just putting it in a different way. And, you know, the technology and stuff, that's kind of cool, whatever, lightsabers, hyperspace, all this kind of stuff. It's cool, but really to me anymore, that's really not any part of the story. I mean, there's an underlying story that I think we need that should be focused on. And honestly, you know, I kind of feel like there was some kind of conspiracy against the prequel movies that as we've been talking about, because, you know, like you mentioned, we've been talking about, like, I didn't catch a lot of this stuff, you know, on first viewings of these films. A lot of the stuff you hear about the prequels, if you just go out into the public and say, like, hey, what do you think of the Star Wars prequels? They'll be like, oh, Jar Jar Binks, he was terrible. It was stupid. Right. Acting was terrible. The green screens, this and that. And again, I mean, they're valid criticisms, but I think that there may have been, and there's no way to prove this at all, but there may have been some mainstream push to, like, listen, we have to give a scapegoat to this movie for people to talk about, because Lucas is hitting it too close to the mark here with where he's going with these stories. It's too close to things that have happened in the past and what we want to do in the future too. So, right. so God forbid people start digging into this kind of stuff, because it's, I think Lucas's saving grace was that to a certain extent, he kind of worked outside the Hollywood system. I mean, he had a lot of big Hollywood friends, but those prequel movies, he financed them all himself. He didn't get any dollars from anybody else. He put millions of dollars up to make those, which allowed him to put a lot of that stuff in there that you probably wouldn't have seen if it was a true Hollywood production. Now, I'm not saying that Lucas is immune to a lot of the terrible things that happen in Hollywood and you know, those kind of people. He has a lot of friends that have done very terrible, terrible things. You know, Steven Spielberg, look into his past. He's a terrible thing.
He's a monster. Yeah.
So I'm not going to excuse any of that stuff, but I feel like he was able to have a little bit of a leash to put more in these stories than Hollywood really would have liked him to.
He had his sound studio. He had his Skywalker Ranch. He was outside of the system as much as you could be. He could do a lot of the stuff on his own. He had license, you know, the toy licensing deals made him billions of dollars. And, you know, so he was not dependent on them for money. He had stupid money from.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he could do whatever he wanted. You know, it's an interesting idea about that being sort of the prequels being downplayed a little bit. I mean, like, yeah, he, you know, I think that's where I learned about the concept of false flags was from George Lucas for these movies, you know, where you see the idea of government acting in a way that is where they say they're doing one thing for their people, but they're actually doing something else. And it's such a simple concept, but to a lot of people, they've never even considered that their government might be lying to them, like might not be upfront with them. They're just good people and they just don't, their brain doesn't go there. But like now all of a sudden they're going, wait a second. So you're saying the government could like tell their people one thing and then do something totally different behind their back. And you see it in the movies, it's delivered as like entertainment, sticks in somebody's brain. And next thing you know, they're like, you know, I bet our government has thought about doing something similar to that. So maybe that's what's going on.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm in the vein of, you know, they hide more of this truth stuff in the movies than they put in our mainstream news every night. You know, I think you're able to glean more about what's really going on when you look at this kind of stuff than what CNN is going to tell you. I'll tell you that. And like talking about, you know, false flags, one of the biggest ones, and, you know, it's kind of, you know, as we're recording this, it's around the anniversary of, you know, the whole January 6th thing, right? You know, the worst event in human civilization.
Yeah.
And in Revenge of the Sith, you know, thoughts and prayers to the millions that died that day. You see at the end of the prequel trilogy, the Jedi finally, at the end of the day, they're like, oh, you know, I think the Emperor is corrupt. I think he's being controlled by the dark side. So they go to confront him and the Emperor ends up killing them all. But he ends up with these scars on his face after he brutally attacked and murdered all them. But then he goes before the Senate, no different than AOC crying about how you know she was, you know, seconds away from death, you know, and he goes up and says, look, the Jedi, they attacked me, I'm deformed and disfigured and all this, and then in his next breath he's like, you know, to combat this we just need to, if we just turn the Republic into an empire and kill the Jedi, everything's gonna be okay, like we just need to elect one dictator for life. And, you know, that will solve all the problems. I mean, look what they did to me. Look what they did to me. This is terrible. And, you know, it's just with that provocation there that, you know, it turns into a dictatorship. Yeah. And, you know, you see very, very similar shades of what happened early 2021 as far as demonizing people who were said to have motives that they really didn't. And it was kind of a huge, you know, CIA, FBI operation.
And what you realize is that none of this shit is new. These are like old tricks. They're such old tricks. They've been written about. They've made movies. They've put these tricks in the movies and all this stuff. People are like, January 6th, man, it was crazy. These people walked into a trap. It's like, of course they did. What the fuck did you think was going to happen? This, you know, or the other side is also the people that are like, oh, it was an insurrection and it was like 9/11. I'm like, you are not a serious person. If you were trying to make a comparison between this and 9/11, like, go fuck yourself. This is jibber jabber. You know what I mean? Like, this was a bunch of LARPing retards out there on a tour of the Capitol building. They like, the cameras, they like went through the stanchions. There was like photographers and everything there. It looked like they were on a tour.
Right. There's a great quote from, I hope it was a real tweet from Norm MacDonald. I saw a screenshot of it. He said, he's like, God bless these insurrectionists who really abided by those velvet ropes as they were walking through the Capitol. And you see the video, and that's what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's embarrassing because when people get all up in arms about that, and it's a nothing, it's like, there's nothing really there. It makes it hard for me to take them seriously when they're talking about other stuff that's, you know, like if you think that January 6th was like Pearl Harbor, then I no longer care what your opinion is about just about anything. Like,
I don't know. I don't know what you want to think about Omicron. I'm sure you think it's like the Black Death.
Right. It's so funny. It's funny that, like you said, that there's the part in the Star Wars movies where it's the media that's telling them, listen, we're losing the war. We're losing the war. And what you realize is that, like, whether that's here on planet Earth or whether that's on, you know, in a galaxy far, far away, if you've got that media component, and you can use it against the public to get them to believe something that isn't true, they know that there, you know, they understand that is important there. And maybe that's us exporting it, you know what I mean? But like, you just think about it. It's like, that's a concept that's never going to get old. Whoever has the ability to talk to all the people, whether it's the preacher or the media or the town crier or whatever, whoever has the ability to get the most people to hear them, that person becomes an important person to control.
Yeah. Look at, I mean, it's very 1984, right? I mean, oh, we're in war with East Asia. No, I'm sorry. We've never been at war with them. We're at war with West Asia over here. No. You don't ever say we're at war with them. If you say that, you're lying. You know, that has never happened before. These people are the enemies over here. And like you said, if the people that have that mouthpiece, just because they have that mouthpiece, doesn't mean everything that comes out of their mouth or anything that comes out of their mouth is the truth. Just like they say, like the person in a room or a debate that's the loudest, just because they're the loudest or they use the most big words or they swear at you more or they're more demonstrative in their language, that does not necessarily mean that they're right. And in most cases, they're probably flailing because they're losing the conversation.
Right.
It's I think we all just need to be very cognizant of that when we're talking to people. Just because somebody has a louder mouthpiece doesn't mean that they're right.
Yeah, we're getting people, they're trying to manipulate us into feeling a certain way. The media is doing that, and they're capturing some people, and then those people get their brains reprogrammed and they start trying to capture you. That's why it's been a fascinating to watch with the vaccine people that are like, got two shots and my booster and got COVID. Thank God I got all my shots or it would have been a whole lot worse. That whole lane of people, that's a fucking weird group to me, man.
That's like a cult. I will say on the flip side of that, I've been here talking to a lot of people recently that I work with, that I know, family, friends that are in that same boat. They did this, they did that, they did this, and they're like, "Listen, why am I still doing this?" They're like, "Why?" Like, I had somebody tell me the other day, like, "I might as well just get a mild virus and be over it at this point. Like, why do I need to get a 6-month booster?" And I'm like, "Control. It's control. Even if all this stuff did everything it was supposed to." It's just all about control. It's all about we're the hamsters in the wheel. They're watching us. they're looking at the numbers, you know, how many people are complying, how many people aren't. It's giant. It's like, we all know this. It's a giant science project to them for compliance.
we're the rats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, where can people find the book?
Sure. Yeah, Charlie, thank you. I appreciate so much for you doing the forward to it. It was great.
It was fun. I'm a Star Wars geek. I don't even hide it. I love it.
I love it.
I love it all. I love that you've made it all more like of a connection for me to bring two things that I like. You know, I like a good conspiracy, and I like these Star Wars movies. And to have the realization that they have a lot of, if it was a Venn diagram, there's a lot of overlap between the two things, has been fascinating for me. And your podcast, The Conspiracy and the Force, is fucking amazing.
Well, thank you. And it's weird. And, you know, the weird thing is that, you know, it's a weird, you know, niche of people that kind of are into these kind of things I'm talking about, because you have on one side, you know, conspiracy people who, a lot of them hate Disney, a lot of them hate the Hollywood. So like, some people get turned off to that just because I'm talking about. And on the other side, you have people who are just into Star Wars, who I'm telling you what, Charlie, anybody listening, like, go check this out. If anybody out there's on Twitter, go to the official Star Wars Twitter page. Look at any post that they did. Go into the likes and just start scrolling through the profiles. It is the most woke shit you will ever see. You will see more pronouns. You will see more hashtags. This movement. It's kind of makes me sad that none of those people who are into that are really understanding some of the themes of these movies. And they love the prequels too, but they're not. So there's a contingent of Star Wars people who aren't into the conspiracy stuff. But you know, Charlie, like you, like a lot of people that I've known and have been talking to over these past few years, are able to acknowledge and appreciate both of those things in a similar context. So I definitely appreciate that. So yeah, you can find the podcast. It's called Conspiracy in the Force. Anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm on Rockfin, YouTube, and Twitter and Instagram at conspiracy_Kyle, and it's conspiracy with a K, so I don't get banned.
That's good strategy.
And the book is on Amazon, and you said you'll put it in the show notes.
I'm gonna put a link to it in the show notes so people can find it there.
I will say too, I'm finishing up the audiobook version of the book as well. So stay tuned to my social media for when that's complete. I'm doing it all myself, so it's taking a little bit of time, but I'm hoping to put out a really cool product here soon. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, Charlie, so much for having me. This has been great.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. Thanks for coming on. This is, I always like to geek out with you about this. So if you like this episode, you can share it with your friends and family. The website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. My Twitter is @macroaggression. And I will talk to you all soon.